God brings Solomon in, and his reign is going to be one of the most remarkable times in the history of Israel.
This is Mission 66, bringing the Bible to life, chapter by chapter. Presented by TWR in partnership with the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. Today, John Matthews and Esther Sisulu are teaching about the kingdom of God established through the line of David in 1 Kings. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide on mission66.org. Let's join John and Esther.
Welcome to our chapter-by-chapter look at the Bible, taking us today into the history of ancient Israel during the times of the kings. Now, the books of 1 and 2 Samuel introduced us to the first of the monarchs, describing the reigns of King Saul and then King David. Well, today we'll be introduced to the first of the books that describe the entire rest of the period of the kings, from David all the way through to the Babylonian captivity of Judah. Now, the first of these is chapter 1 of 1 Kings, the death of David and the ascension to the throne of his son Solomon. Our teacher is John Matthews, and he'll lead us through chapters 1 and 2 of 1 Kings with the theme, Restless Succession.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to this latest episode of Mission 66, wherever you are and whatever your situation. It is so good to be with you today as we reach two books in the Old Testament of the Bible, and they're called the Book of Kings, 1 Kings and then 2 Kings. These books come after the two books of Samuel, and as Esther alluded to there, they are describing a 460-year period of the monarchy in Israel. Now, if you've been listening to Mission 66, you may remember that Israel was initially ruled by judges. These were tribal leaders who occasionally assumed a form of national leadership. But the people came to the judges and they said, look, we want a king, similar to the nations around us. Why can't we have a king? And we've already seen the reigns of the first king, that was Saul, and the second king was David here on Mission 66. And the period of Israel's monarchy began when Samuel, who was the last judge, anointed Saul. That was around the year 1050 BC. And the nation then prospered under David and indeed under his son Solomon. By now, King David was already an elderly man. In fact, he was feeling cold because of his age. And so he was asking for covers to be put on him. According to the ancient custom, since he was the king, he had a young woman who would take care of him. Her name was Abishag. And David's reign ended around the year 970 BC. Now, there was a son of David whose name was Adonijah, and he was the eldest surviving son of David's children. And in verse 5, the Bible says, now Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith, put himself forward and said, I will be king. So he got chariots and horses ready with 50 men to run ahead of him. Now, his father had never rebuked him by saying to him, why do you behave as you do? He was also very handsome, and he was born next after Absalom. So Adonijah was the son of Haggith, and it seems that Haggith wanted to stir the situation here. So she starts to support her own son, who the verse indicates this is Adonijah was handsome, good looking, and apparently had not been taught by David what was right and wrong. So pretty much had been allowed to do as he pleased. The verse says there that David had never said to him when he behaved in a way that was just unbecoming or incorrect. David had never said, why are you doing that? Why do you behave that way? And never sort of tried to nurture him in that sense. That's the indication. So he does as he pleases. And it seems that David is repeating the whole Absalom story again. And at this moment, Adonijah, who probably knew well that the throne was not destined for him, decides he's going to push for a succession that would have no peace. And he makes this kind of agreement with the priest Abiathar. And many then give him their support, except for Zadok, Benaiah, the prophet Nathan, Shimei, Rai, and David's special guard who did not join Adonijah. But he provides this sacrifice nonetheless, this kind of special ceremony, and there he proclaims himself king. But Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, was told of all this by the prophet Nathan, so she goes to speak with King David. And verse 15 says, "So Bathsheba went to see the aged king in his room where Abishai, the Shunammite, was attending him. And Bathsheba bowed down, prostrating herself before the king." So they have this chat, and Bathsheba says, "My lord, you yourself swore to me, your servant, by the Lord your God, that Solomon, your son, shall be king after me, and he will sit on my throne." So she's talking to the king, and the prophet Nathan, as she's talking, arrives, and then everything is confirmed, the story. And so now David knows what's going on. So King David says, "Call in Bathsheba." And the king then takes an oath, "As surely as the Lord lives, who has delivered me out of every trouble, I will surely carry out this very day what I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel. Solomon, your son, shall be king after me, and he will sit on my throne in my place." And then the Bible shows us that David is going to carry on in this direction, fulfilling what was promised. In fact, it's probable that Adonijah, son of David, feeling that he had the right to be king for being older than Solomon, attempted this coup to take the throne by force. But in verse 32, it says, "King David said, 'Call in Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada.' And when they came before the king, he said to them, 'Take your Lord's servants with you, and have Solomon my son mount my own mule, and take him down to Gihon. And there have Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him king over Israel. Blow the trumpet and shout, Long live King Solomon.'" So in obedience to the king's orders, things begin heading in the right direction according to what had been planned out by David. And Solomon becomes the king of Israel. But in the midst of this confusion, of this succession with no peace, problems are still arising. From verse 38 and on, the priest Zadok and the prophet Nathan, Benaiah, the Kadathites and the Pelethites, they went down and they had Solomon mount King David's mule. And with that, verse 41 says, "Adonijah and all the guests who were with him heard it as they were finishing their feast. And on hearing the sound of the trumpet, Joab asked, 'What's the meaning of all the noise in the city?' At this, all Adonijah's guests rose in alarm and they dispersed. But Adonijah, in fear of Solomon, went and took hold of the horns of the altar." Now the altar was found in the tent of meeting in the holy place, and it was the place where sacrifices were offered. And there Adonijah, knowing that it was a sacred place, went to find refuge in a disrespectful way. And when Solomon discovered this, the king promised that he would not be killed by the sword. So his life was preserved, and Adonijah then came and bowed down to King Solomon. And with that, Solomon's reign begins to adjust itself, and David provides several instructions for the future of the kingdom, especially in terms of dealing with certain people who'd been a problem to him in the past and those who'd been a blessing to him. And David makes reference to Joab. He mentions the sons of Barzillai of Gilead, also Shimei. And so David is finally, after all of this, his life comes to an end. And he passes away. And the Bible says that David ruled for 40 years in Israel, 7 years in Hebron, and 33 in Jerusalem. And Solomon now takes over the kingdom completely. And Solomon, as was promised by God, becomes king. And despite all of this, complications are still going to continue. Again, Adonijah goes to speak to Bathsheba, and he asks that Abishag, the woman who cared for his father David when he was an elderly man, should become his wife. It was his way of trying to yield and build power, showing that he had power by inheriting the woman who had been his father's. So he goes and he asks Bathsheba to speak to Solomon in his favour, on his behalf. And with this, Solomon's asked to do this, and Solomon is upset. He perceives the improper attitude of Adonijah. And verse 23 says, "Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, 'May God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if Adonijah does not pay with his life for this request. And now, as surely as the Lord lives, he who has established me securely on the throne of my father David and has founded a dynasty for me as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today.'" So King Solomon gives orders to Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, and he strikes down Adonijah and he dies. And so we observe this is happening. And at the end of chapter 2, we're going to have other tragedies, vengeance taken because of old problems. And so many problems have derived from fallen human nature. But it is important to discover that despite this weakness, despite the confusion here in ancient times, God is still in control of history, revealing his power and his grace. And here we have the beginning of what is a glorious reign, the glorious reign of King Solomon.
This is Mission 66, and we're here with our teacher, John Matthews, exploring the Bible chapter by chapter. And today, we've come to 1 Kings chapters 1 and 2. And I can certainly say that this was indeed a restless succession, John. So how about we start off with establishing who the author of this book was?
Yeah, good place to start, Esther. We actually don't have a direct understanding of the authorship of the book itself. Tradition suggests that the author may have been the prophet Jeremiah, who lived near the time of the end of the monarchy. That's possible, but we don't have absolute certainty about that. But what we do know is that the two books of Kings were originally a single literary composition. So these two books were considered one complete work. And if we look towards the end of 2 Kings, we see the time marking the end of the kingdom of Judah when they were taken into exile in Babylon around the year 586 BC. So it spans, you know, a good chunk of Old Testament history, these two books.
Actually, speaking of history, what would you say is the purpose of the Book of Kings? Is it primarily a history book of Israel?
No, not primarily, and yet it has proven, as Kings, to be historically accurate. Archaeology has uncovered many things which confirm details included in the book. But actually, the Book of Kings is more about the relationship between Israel's monarchy and the covenant that God had established with Israel from long time past. And so this relationship between monarchy and God's covenant is a central focus in the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now, how do we know that Solomon was actually picked by God to be the king instead of Adonijah?
Yeah, good question. Well, the answer is that God had revealed it to David. It's hinted at here in Kings, but also in the book of First Chronicles. That's another account of the same incident. In fact, let's go there and read it, because it says in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 7, that David said to Solomon, "My son, I had it in my heart to build a house to the name of the Lord my God. But the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'You have shed much blood and have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name, because you have shed so much blood before me on the earth. Behold, a son shall be born to you who shall be a man of rest. I will give him rest from all his surrounding enemies, for his name shall be Solomon, and I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. David said further in verse 12, only may the Lord grant you discretion and understanding that when he gives you charge over Israel, you may keep the law of the Lord your God.
You know, a thought that keeps running through my mind, could it be that perhaps Adonijah knew that Solomon was God's pick for king rather than himself, John?
Yeah, he absolutely knew, Esther. He just didn't like it. He was one of those guys who says, look, I don't care what God says. I want what I want, and I'm going to do everything I can to get it. Even coming to Solomon saying, look, I know that you are king, but he's then scheming to try and find a way to wheedle his way into a position where he can claim the throne, or certainly make a claim for the throne.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that his story perhaps is a cautionary tale for us, and we need to pay very special attention to how this unfolds. But in regards to his request for Abishag to be his wife, what was so wrong about that? It kind of seems like it was a reasonable request.
Yeah, well, this is part of his scheming that I just mentioned there, Esther. You know, his request, you're right, it seems reasonable, but it's a plot to strengthen his claim to be king. In those days, taking possession of a king's concubine was a declaration of intent to take the throne. This is the same thing that Absalom did, wasn't it, when he led a coup against his father David. And so it was probably a pretty insulting thing that he could have done to David. And Abishag was considered part of those who were loyal to David. And, you know, had she been permitted to marry Adonijah, it would clearly have strengthened his claim to the throne in the eyes of the people. But Solomon is wise enough to quickly discern the real motivation behind the requests. And so serious does he find the threat and just the brazen nature of it, because he knew what was going on. So much so is that he has Adonijah killed.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, just in the continuation of the story, John, you know, Solomon, once he had taken over, he went after all his enemies, right? Even Joab, who had served David faithfully as the army general.
He had, but we've also seen the duplicitous and at times scheming character of Joab. You know, there was a real inconsistency and instability about him that made him dangerous in the end, in a position where he had much responsibility. He murders one of his brothers, Amasa, openly supports Adonijah, and so he's just not to be trusted. And then there's Shimei, the guy who throws rocks at David, and even though David had officially forgiven Shimei for insulting him, he tells Solomon he needs to watch out for him as well. And Joab and Shimei, well, they are both killed at the end of chapter 2.
Wow. Well, you know what? This has been an interesting start to our look into the book of First Kings. Perhaps we can go ahead now into summarizing what we've read today, because there's a lot that's going on in these two chapters.
Yeah. And today, Esther, we began our journey through First Book of Kings. And the theme as we looked at chapters 1 and 2 was a restless succession, this transition of power from King David to Solomon. And as David nears his death, his son Adonijah attempts to claim the throne. But Nathan the prophet and Bathsheba, well, they remind David of God's promise that Solomon was to be the one to succeed him. So Solomon is anointed king, and Adonijah's rebellion then fails. And after David's death, Solomon consolidates his rule by removing all threats. And Solomon's reign, ordained by God, was to be a time of peace and prosperity for Israel.
That was our teacher, John Matthews, taking us through this fascinating look through the book of First Kings. And we hope that next time you'll join us as we look into the next chapter. Well, friend, something amazing about this ministry of Mission 66 is that it's heard in several languages around the world. You know, we depend on your prayers and your financial support to continue this ministry globally. So to give a gift to this ministry, please would you visit mission66.org today. Well, friend, for myself, Esther, and our entire team, thank you for listening. See you next time on Mission 66.
That's it for today's episode of Mission 66. But before you go, make sure to check out mission66.org for your free study guide. It's a great way to get more from the Bible and to see how it connects with your life. Cruise through the scriptures with John and Esther, chapter by chapter. Grab your free study guide at mission66.org and be all set for our next episode. While you're at the site, shoot John and Esther a message or ask them a question. You can also become a Mission 66 Global Partner with your donation, helping Mission 66 get to more places in more languages. All the actions at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry partnership of TWR and Dr. Luis Seau.